be a problem for me. But what choice did I have? I tried to play nice first. He pushed me to this. I hate egotistical men who don't believe a smallish girl can be a threat.
I got the idea about the chicken from Tremblay. Heard him bragging over drinks. Said he was going to bring people to heel.
What people? The two groups I see at Tremblay's mercy, with his hands on a device like the Schlafhammer, are the Alliance and the OSG, either through blackmail or its actual usage.
I don't know. Figured I'd know once I saw what it was.
And you didn't stop to think how it might be bad for your health to go after something you don't even know the details about? And I thought I was the only gloob flying through the area.
I know when a guy like Tremblay gets excited enough to brag, I can ask more questions later. Besides, I didn't have to get that far.
Maybe he's not that dumb. A middleman. Is that what he was aiming to be? So all you needed to do was get it before he did, and then you'd offer to sell it to him. Is that it? He shrugs.
Maybe. Like I said, I was willing to wait on my final plans after seeing it.
I back away and signal to Jeffers with my eyebrows that he should do the same. Good enough, unless you want to confess anything else. Captain Bob looks up at me with murder in his eyes.
This isn't the end of things between you and me.
Nope. You're right about that. He glances at my knife blade before responding.
You gonna show me the chicken?
I shake my head. That's another nope. I wiggle the knife up and down.
Stand, asshole. You're going to spend a little time in my brig. But you said you'd put me back on my ship.
He struggles to get to his feet while still cradling his hand. Huffing and puffing soon ensues.
Gotta fix up that hand of yours, don't I?
Besides, my engineers have a few modifications they need to make to your boat before I let you back on it. He's spitting, he's so mad.
You have no right!
It's like he grows 10 extra centimeters in size as he puffs himself up to full height. I look up to keep us eye to eye. Actually, I have the right to float your fat ass, but I'm not going to do that. Nor am I going to turn my back on you for a single second. So get used to the fact that until further notice, you're a guest on my ship. Maybe if you behave yourself, I'll feed you. I back out of the storage area and hold the wall to steady myself as I go down the stairs. You good, Jeffers?
Yes, Captain.
He says, sounding tired and maybe a little disappointed. It makes my heart clench up. Damn it, why do I care so much what he thinks of me? Thank you. Come see me when he's secure. I walk to the flight deck on trembling legs, freaked out about what I've learned and what I've just decided to do with this pirate asshole. It almost makes me long for the days when I was hitching rides on other people's rigs and just living to survive. Life was so much simpler then. Surviving is much easier than thriving. I wonder if I'll ever get there, to the point where I feel like I've made it to the other side, drifting, making my own way, and not looking in my six all the time for someone to come up behind me and jack me up. Chapter 18. Bei Bong is waiting for me on the flight deck when I arrive.
What's going on?
He asks, standing at his station when I approach. What's going on? I fall down into my seat and stare out the clear panel into the dark. My mind is swimming with the craziness that is my life.
Well, we have a guy headed for the brig who is here to steal the Schlafhammer that he heard about from Tremblay when the idiot was too drunk to realize what he was saying.
I have no idea whether he was going to sell us out to Tremblay or use the device against us, or the OSG, or even none of the above. Maybe he had another plan. I didn't want to stick him again to get more information. I rub at my head, worried a massive headache is hiding just behind my eyes, waiting to come out and take over my brain. There's a tingle there that usually signals the pain is soon to arrive, and I don't know that the MI on this ship is prepared to deal with the migraine.
You stuck him?
Just a flesh wound. When he came at me.
Dumbass.
I hope you mean him. I laugh sadly, knowing it would be fair enough to attribute that moniker to myself. I let my hand fall away and watch my friend turn in his seat.
Him, of course.
Bei Bong studies me for a few seconds, and then he stands, coming over to my side. He punches me lightly on the upper arm when he gets there.
You're doing just fine, Cass. Stop stressing. I whack him lightly in the chest with the back of my hand. Don't tell me what to do. He gives me a half grin and shoves me sideways.
Sure, Captain. Whatever you say. What's our next step?
Sighing as he goes back to his station, I look out the panel again, trying to envision the best way to set myself and my crew up for success with the upcoming Alliance decision on the horizon. I hope those people are going to like my gift. I want our engineers to de-arm that pirate ship and prepare it to be towed. No exterior comm links can exist, just a link with us. Then I want that fat fucker sealed up inside it so I don't have to smell him anymore.
Is that where that stink's coming from?
Baybong waves his hand in front of his face as he links up with the twins.
Damn, I wasn't going to say anything, but...
I smile as he continues going on and on about my lack of hygiene being strikingly similar to that of our pirate guest. I'm just too tired to fight back right now. I have to conserve my energy for dealing with Macon, the Alliance, and the stuff I just learned about Tremblay, my newest enemy in what promises to be a long line of them, if the past couple days is anything to judge by. I'm brought back to the present when he shifts from insulting me to transmitting over the comm.
Yo, Ginger Boys.
There are some crackling sounds over the line before a response comes.
Listen, Slanai, if you want us to continue to answer your transmissions, you're going to have to chill on the insults.
Tam sounds as tired as I feel.
Ginger's not an insult. It's just who you are. Can't help that you wish you were a Slanai, too. Got orders from the captain. You ready?
Affirmative.
That ship we're docked with? You gotta cut its comm lines. Nothing outside of the Anarchy can comm in or out. Got it?
Yeah. Tam's voice is already perking up.
De-arm the thing, too. Junk blasters, the works. We gonna keep it? Man, I'll bet it has some sweet parts.
I shake my head as Baybong turns to me for an answer.
She says no.
I link in to explain, figuring they'll do a better job if they know what I'm up to. He's going to be an off-site prisoner until the Alliance shows up to deal with them. In the meantime, I don't want him signaling any friends or using anything he has on there against us.
Oh, okay. So you want a full electronic sweep?
Gus's voice comes over the link.
Did I hear someone say electronic sweep?
I can't help smiling. He reminds me of an eager puppy.
Yes,
I say. Disable that mofo.
What about the vacuum cycle?
Tam asks.
You want me to work on that now or keep it on hold still?
I shake my head while answering, even though he can't see me. No, let's go ahead with it. Good idea. Cycle us up. The threat is removed for the moment, so I'm not worried about the power suck anymore. Turning my attention to Baybong, I drop my voice. Bring up the holding chambers for me. I want to make sure Captain Boob makes it to where he's supposed to be. A clear panel to my left blinks and then formats itself into four separate screen blocks, each showing a chamber. One shows Macon standing in the float chamber, still looking out at the dark. He doesn't look as if he's moved even a single inch. Two others are empty, but the last one on the bottom left shows Jeffers leading a limping pirate into his cell. At the entrance, Jeffers puts his hand on the man's shoulder and leans in close to say something to him. Baybong, reading my mind, brings up the comlink so we can listen in.
Everything is going to be okay. Don't worry. Just rest here, and I'll be back with medical supplies to tend to your wound. She's crazy, you know. You're not going to come to any good end flying with her. I've heard things.
I stop breathing as I wait to hear my crewmate's response. Jeffers looks as though he's going to say something, but then he twists his head around to look up at the video capture unit above his head. He slowly backs out of the door, shutting it behind him before he exits, not another word leaving his lips.
He going to be a problem?
Baybong asks softly, his slightly disappointed tone telling me he's referring to Jeffers, not the pirate.
I really wish I knew.
I say, sad that I have to answer that way. An hour ago, I would have said that I trusted Jeffers. Now, I'm not so sure I should. I doubt his confidence in me extends to a point that he'll blindly follow when my tactics don't agree with his sense of right and wrong. He might be battle-hardened and impressive with the way he manages prisoners, but that doesn't mean he likes conflict. I have a feeling Jeffers is one of those guys who's seen too much and had to move as far in the other direction as possible to keep sane. From killer to healer. It happens. All it takes to succeed is a decision to do it
and then consistent follow-through backed by a buttload of willpower. For a guy like him, a girl like me could be a problem. I'll definitely put that willpower to the test. I'm sure I already have.
Better watch your back,
Baibong says. Please, I don't even want to hear that right now.
Don't worry, I've got it. Your back, I mean.
I smile vaguely at him as a pain from the anticipated headache starts to seep into my brain. Thanks, that means a lot.
You okay?
He squints at me. Headache.
Migraine?
Not yet. Baibong talks into his comm unit.
Jeffers, hey, we've got a migraine making its way up here to the flight deck. You got anything for that?
I rest my head on my hand and close my eyes, not paying any attention to the answer that comes over the line. I just want to rest for a few minutes. Then I'll get back to worrying about every single thing that can go wrong on my ship in the next 24 hours. My mind swirls with darkness as slivers of pain slice into my temples, making me vaguely nauseated.
Chapter 19. Jeffers arrives 20 or so minutes later with an herbal tea concoction that sends me on my way to Happy Town. I don't care that it's causing me to feel a little bit loopy, because it's also getting rid of the massive headache that was making me think a 10-hour nap was going to be the only thing able to keep me alive. Gus walks onto the flight deck as I'm taking the last sip of the slightly tree-barky flavored brew.
Good news! The vacuum cycle is finished!
He rubs his hands together.
And we've done a sweep of the PC Mahalo, and she's all clean, dead in the water, except for a short-range link to the Anarchy.
What about the exercise equipment I asked you for the cargo bay?
Almost done. Just need another set of hands to finish up.
He looks over at Baibong.
You have a few minutes?
Baibong gets up. Bay, when you're done, do me a favor and go talk to Lucinda. See if there's anything she needs help with. He nods, which is a nice surprise. I expected to get flack from him about turning him into a brown shins. Baibong follows Gus out the door, leaving Jeffers and me alone. I put the cup down on the wide arm of my chair and smile at him. Thank you, healer. That was just what I needed. His smile is not as warm as before.
I think what you need is more sleep.
That too. But no rest for the wicked, eh? I stare at him, waiting to see if he'll take me up on my invitation to judge me, to share his feelings about all the mistakes he thinks I'm making. I hate that my stomach tenses up in anticipation of receiving that information.
Wicked. I wouldn't call you wicked, Cass. Determined. Ruthless, maybe, but not wicked.
A bitter laugh breaks free.
Ruthless?
Excellent. That's exactly how people have described my father. It's how I would describe him.
What are you thinking right now?
Jeffers asks me, his head tilted very slightly. I stare out the clear panel before me.
Oh, I don't know. That sometimes, no matter how far and how fast you run from something, it's always just right there next to you anyway. There's no escaping it.
You're speaking about your past. Your relationship with your father.
More like my whole existence.
I look back at him and see the face of someone who cares. It's probably just the brew causing me to see and think that. I wonder if the concoction was designed to get me talking, but my curiosity about that is not stopping me from sharing, that's for sure. I just want to get the words out of me and out of my head for good. I only knew one world for the longest time, and then... I think about Macon and can't continue. I risk tears going further down that road. And I'm afraid once they start, I won't be able to stop them. Not with this friggin' tea in me.
You left after your fight with Macon, is that right?
I nod, clamping my teeth together to keep from saying anything else.
He was your friend. A good friend, I take it.
I nod once more. It seems crazy that it's only now when it's being pointed out to me that I've realized it, but it's true. That fight with Macon was the last straw. That was the impetus I needed to finally get myself out of there. I'd been thinking about it and planning it in the back of my head for a long time, but my actual departure was a last-minute decision fueled by my horror and sadness over what I'd done.
That must have been very difficult, to be pitted against your friend and forced to take his life or lose your own.
His statement doesn't need a response from me.
We both know he's 100% right, but the memory hits me and kind of wakes me up from my tea-induced stupor with its clarity. My emotions at the time were so out of place. I remember thinking it was totally normal to be standing there in the pit with Macon across from me. We'd come up through the last several levels together. He was ahead of me at first, but I caught up. He's older. Did you know that? I look at Jeffers on the verge of crying as the memory wraps me up tight. I suspected. He looks older. He is. A few years. Before I came up to his level, I guess he was kind of uninspired. But then we got partnered in several rounds, some training pits, and we became friends. Then he worked harder so we could stay together. I'm finding it hard to swallow past the lump in my throat. I have to stop talking or I risk vomiting up my sadness. And then you had to fight him to the death. Jeffers looks at the ground, shaking his head. What they've done and continue to do to our youth, it's criminal. It should not be tolerated. I sigh long and loud, looking out at the dark. It feels good to hear someone else say that. Yes, I agree. Now I do, anyway. Back then, I just accepted it. Everyone there does. A long silence follows before I speak again. And so here we are. I face my healer-slash-cook-slash-navigator-slash-possible-leader of an eventual mutiny on my ship. Me sitting here, wondering if I can trust you not to stab me in the back one day. And you, standing there, revealing nothing that will change my thoughts on that. There's a bitterness to my words. I want to like him and trust him, but he's refusing to be drawn into that place. I hate it when people won't cooperate with my plans. He's such an asset. I really want him on my side. Now it's Jeffers' turn to stare out the clear panel to the dark beyond. He stands there for so long, saying nothing. I figure our conversation is over. My mind wanders to the Alliance, wondering when they're going to contact us, whether we're going to have to pass some test to get in, or whether they're going to just hear about me and decide I'm too big a risk. Will I tell them about the biogrid right from the beginning, or use it to bargain with if they reject me? I was with the OSG from a very young age as well. Jeffers' voice is so unexpected it startles me. I sit up straighter to cover my reaction. Oh yeah? Yes. In fact, I was one of those people who sat in judgment, who chose which recruit would be pitted against another. Oh, I guess you did pretty well there then. That job is reserved for the veterans, the men who are part of the inner sanctum. They report to the top brass. I knew he was experienced from the way he carries himself, but this kind of shocks me. Those guys are lifers. None of them ever leave except in a body bag. Is he the only one who's ever escaped? Or maybe others have tried and their former colleagues just made it look like a natural death when they failed? If by pretty well you mean that the blood of many humans has run through my fingers, then yes. His voice has gone cold and his body stiff. You left, though. I find that hard to believe. Leaving at that level? It just doesn't happen. Actually, I was shipped out. I frown. How could you have been shipped out? You're alive. Shipping out only happens in really rare circumstances when someone's so damaged from a fight or accident that no amount of MI is going to bring them back. It's a term I never like to use because it's a lie. Everyone knows it means floating. It's just done where no one can see it. A dirty little secret the OSG likes to keep under wraps and no one talks about in mixed company. I have friends, good friends, who never let me down. I feel sick over that. I let Macon down. Good for you. I try but fail to not sound bitter. I hate myself more than I did 10 minutes ago, and I would have thought that impossible. People make mistakes. I've made a lifetime of them. But when I was given a second chance, I knew it was more than an opportunity. It was a gift. I needed to atone for my sins, and the universe provided me with the perfect circumstances in which to do it. Which was a new life. I was reborn to become the man you see before you today. I seek peace and harmony in all things, rather than conflict. I bring life, not death. I seek friendships with people who I can trust to live a good life with me, who wish to bring light into the world,
not darkness. Oh, well. He's definitely not describing me, even though a very big part of me wishes he were. I guess you'll be getting off at the next station, then. I can't believe how sad that makes me. I feel like I'm the darkest of dark people, running my life on the blade of a knife, always ready to push my agenda through with the tip of it.
Not necessarily.
He faces me more fully now, his head up and eyes alert.
What's that supposed to mean?
I'm suspicious, like I am of any preacher who tries to show me the way down whatever path they claim is the one of righteousness.
It means that I see who you really are, Cass. And I like that person. I would fly a lifetime with that woman.
I hear a but behind that declaration. I smile at that, a sad type of smile, though. There have been a lot of those kinds of buts in my life. I love you, but... I'd be happy to let you do that, but... You could leave, but... Then I'd have to kill you.
There are no buts. I just wonder if you're aware of how often you are not yourself.
I have to think about that for a few seconds. I don't get it. I'm always me.
None of us are just one person all the time. We're more complicated than that. Sometimes we are our best selves. Other times, not. I'm a healer and a cook. Sometimes I'm a defender, and other times I'm an enforcer. But through it all, even though I am sometimes fractured, I am a man who is here to atone, to become better than who I was. The essence of who I am does not change. I seek to be my best self in every situation. The question is, who are you? Who is the real Cass Kennedy? Have you ever stopped to think about that? Have you ever just decided who you're going to be, who your best self is, and use that as your guidance beacon? I shrug, almost amused by his attempt to dig into a deepness that just isn't there with me. I'd like to think I'm this amazing person who has all these facets like you have, but I'm just not. I see what I want, and I go get it. If someone gets in my way, I go around them. If I can't go around them, I go through them. And I give no mercy to those who try to hurt me or my friends. Even when it's you doing the hurting. What then? His words are like a knife pricking me in the heart. Even then, I say, no mercy. He's right about me. I do cause pain and I don't forgive, even when it's me who's to blame. But I'm okay with that. Why should I show myself any mercy? I've hurt people doing the things I've done, so I deserve to pay for that with regret and loss of friendships. That's fair. I've never believed one can atone for sins like I've committed. The hurt doesn't ever go away, and people never forget what you've done to them when it's left scars. It makes a view of Macon up on that clear panel even more depressing. He was my friend, and I turned him into my enemy simply by not thinking things through, by not being my best self. I will never be able to atone for that. No one has a heart big enough to forgive on that level. Jeffers isn't done trying to save my soul. You deserve mercy, just as anyone does. You just have to truly want it and be willing to earn it.
I shrug off his touchy-feely advice, not believing a word of it. But I don't want to alienate him entirely because I know he's trying to help, so I offer up something I think he'll like. I need to get better at planning. I'm imagining that I could kind of limit my sins in the future by being more careful. At thinking before taking action. Jeffers nods, looking almost hopeful.
I suspect most people could use a little more of that skill.
Maybe you could remind me when you see me jumping into things that I should take a moment to think first.
I could try. I don't suppose you'll always listen.
His mouth quirks up in a smile at that. But I can try. If you'll try, I'll try. Why I'm setting this guy up to be my monitor, I have no idea, other than it feels like the right thing to do. It could be the tea making me hopeful and willing to take silly risks. Ironically, this is probably one of those times I should think something through more thoroughly before I open my mouth. Why does life have to be so confusing?
Cass, I trust that you will do everything you can to make this ship fly, and fly well. To get along in the universe with others in a positive way. You left the OSG to start a new life.
and I know from personal experience that this is no small feat. Anyone who manages to do it is usually very motivated to succeed. I also know that you have not yet begun to pay for that decision, and that the day you do, everyone around you will feel the pain with you. But even so, I'm here. I'm going to remain a part of your crew as long as you stay true to who you are, and as long as you remember the reasons why you left the OSG to become the captain of the DS Anarchy.
I nod. I can't ask for any more than that.
On the contrary, one day you will be able to. I hope we get there together.
I nod again, but can't say anything else. I've been disappointed way too many times in my life to believe we could end up being like family, which is what I think he's offering. But that's okay, because being a tight crew is good enough for me.
What are you going to do about him?
Jeffers asks, switching focus to the clear panel. He lifts a hand toward the float chamber and Megan inside it.
Nothing for right now. Could you make sure he gets food and a place to sleep in one of the brig chambers?
I could. But maybe it would be better if you did that.
I shake my head.
I can't. He hates me.
He just needs time to heal. We all do.
Yeah, and in the meantime, I have to worry about him stabbing me between the shoulder blades. Jeffers gives me a scolding look.
He had plenty of opportunity to do that before you found out who he really is, and he was never anything but willing and accommodating.
Yeah, when he was trying to get his hands on the disc and was waiting for his ride out of here.
I shake my head.
I love Macon, but I can't trust him.
If you say so.
Jeffers bows and backs up a step.
I'll go now if that suits you.
I sigh. We're back on formal terms, apparently.
Yes, it suits me fine, thanks.
You're welcome.
Jeffers leaves me on the flight deck alone, and I sit there trying to figure out what to do next. Should I check out the progress made by my engineers and lieutenant? Visit the biogrid to see how Lucinda's getting along? Take a nap and sleep off this crazy tea that's still making me feel a little woozy? Move Captain Boob over to his dead ship and seal him inside? Beg forgiveness from the boy who I know will never give it? I stand, my decision made based on the theory of which is the greater evil.
Chapter 20. Standing outside the float chamber, I watch Megan through the portal window as he stares into the abyss. I wonder what he's thinking, if he's planning my demise or waiting for the moment he'll be released into the dark, where he'll suffer a painful death. Maybe he's thinking back to that moment in the challenge pit when I stood over him with my knife at his throat. I know that's all I can think about now. The door slides open, and I step over the threshold. Megan? He doesn't turn or say anything. Macon, I'm here to move you to another spot.
I'm fine here.
It's so strange to see him still being Rollo, but to hear him being Macon. I've never been so fully conned in my entire life.
Well, I'm not fine with you here. Come on.
I back out of the door, waiting for him to follow me. He takes his time about it, but eventually he's there in the threshold, looking straight ahead. Eye contact is too much to expect, I suppose. I gesture out with my hand. This way. My original plan to bring him to another holding chamber is suddenly overruled by my intense desire to make a connection with him. Any connection will do. I just need to keep him close. He steps out and moves in front of me, walking as though he's moving down death row instead of away from it with every step. Take a left up ahead and climb the stairs on your right. He stops at the base of those stairs.
This goes up to the main deck.
Yes, it does.
I thought you were going to put me in the brig.
So did I. I jerk my head up toward the top of the stairs. Go on, I don't have all day. He ascends, looking down at me when he reaches the top of the short stairway.
You should probably put me down below.
When I come up behind him, he moves to the right to give me room to stand in the corridor next to him. I see this as a move toward peace, because he could have easily pressed the advantage and kicked me in the teeth. Instead, he showed me he didn't want to appear threatening.
Why?
I ask. You going to stab me while I sleep? I stare at him, looking for the truth or a lie in his eyes. A sad smile I remember well comes out from a face I still don't recognize. effectively twisting my heart into a knot. The pain is intense.
I've thought about it.
And? He shrugs. Come on. I don't wait for him to answer or follow. I just go down the hallway that leads to the chamber where I've settled in. I finally stop when I'm at the door next to my own.
What's this?
He asks. This is your room until we dock at the next station, or you piss me off. Whichever comes first.
But this is right next to your bunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Aren't you worried I'll come after you while you sleep?
I have a lock.
Which I could easily disable, as you well know.
He was always pretty good with that stuff in training. Better than I was, for sure. I guess I'll just have to take that risk. He looks at the two doors and deflates a little.
I get it. Keeping friends close and enemies closer? You haven't forgotten your training, have you?
His smile isn't friendly. It's bitter and angry, and I don't blame him for turning it on me. Something like that. I put my hand on the keypad and the door slides open. The smell in the room is slightly stale, but thanks to the vacuum cycles, it's clean. A bare bunk awaits. After you, I say. He steps inside, walking down the short ladder steps to the floor. When he's fully inside, he turns to face me. When I reach the bottom of the stairs, I call out to the commubot. Adele?
Yes, Captain.
The occupant of this room is Macon, formerly known as Rolo. You have his biorhythms in your system already?
Yes, I do.
He is to be kept in this chamber unless I come to retrieve him or give someone else the authority to do that.
Understood.
Adele, Macon is a very accomplished lock and connections disruptor. He will more than likely try to escape this room.
What do you wish me to do if he attempts to do that, Captain?
I stare at Macon, and he stares back as I issue my response. Alert me, and maintain current status of his location at all times.
As you wish, Captain.
Macon sits down on the bed.
I guess I'm in the brig after all.
I shake my head. You are welcome to leave the room and assist the crew any time you want. You just need to ask me first. You're not a prisoner, you're just being monitored. He snorts.
Big difference.
I shrug.
It can be.
It's entirely up to you and how you look at it. I rest my weight on one leg and cock a hip.
What did you expect? That I'd just forget that you snuck on here with ulterior motives?
He plays with his hands, not looking at me.
I just did what I had to do to survive.
Another twisting of my heart muscle.
Ugh, hurts.
My voice softens. I know. I get it. And someday I want you to tell me how you did that when you left the OSG. He shakes his head, but doesn't elaborate. Another time. I have things to do. I back out of the room, and at the last minute turn to go up the short steps. Call me if you need anything.
A fritter would be nice.
I smile without turning around.
Fritters are for crew. You want a fritter? Go to work.
I leave without waiting to hear a response from him. I figure he needs some time to think about what I've said, and to contemplate the situation he's found himself in. He has to decide if he's here to get along until it's time to get off the ship, here to try and kill me, here to sell me out, or here to stay. I doubt very highly he's capable or willing to select the last option, but everything inside of me is hoping he will anyway. Chapter 21. My next stop is the brig and the chamber holding Captain Boob. I mean Bob. Pressing the comm button outside the door, I lean into it so he'll be sure to hear me. Captain Bob, ready to go back to your ship? I hear a rustling sound and then a voice coming from somewhere near the transmitter.
I was ready a couple hours ago.
I roll my eyes. You haven't been in here that long. I place my hand on the keypad and the door opens. He's standing right there, his big, hulking form taking up almost the entire entrance. He sounded so cranky and tired when he spoke a couple seconds ago, I'm not expecting his hand to shoot out and grab me by the neck, but it sure as hell does, faster than I would have thought possible. I try to scream, but my air is already cut off. He's squeezing my windpipe with intent to kill, murder in his eyes as spittle flies from his mouth and he grunts his next words out.
I'll teach you to disrespect your elders. Try to take my ship? I think I'll take yours instead.
My leg shoots out without conscious thought, and my boot catches him in the thigh. Unfortunately, I miss the most sensitive spot between his legs, but my strike is strong enough to help loosen his grip and allow some oxygen into my lungs and brain. I take a deep breath before he tightens his fingers again and squeezes even harder, cutting off my air once more. I gag as I try to pull in just a molecule or two of oxygen. It's impossible. My windpipe is completely collapsed under his hand, and I know that even when he releases me, if he releases me, I'm still going to have a hard time breathing. There's permanent damage happening under that iron grip of his. Somehow, cold, rational logic seeps into my oxygen-starved brain. This is no game, no simple lesson he's trying to teach me. I'm going to die in less than 2 minutes if I don't do something drastic. He and I reach for my knife at the same time. I'm faster because I have more practice, and he has that cut on his other hand already slowing him down. Thank the universe for that. The handle's in my fingers, and I'm closing them to get a better grip on it. But then his blood from his earlier injury starts flowing all over everything, including my weapon, and makes it too slippery. Just as I slide it free of the holder, it falls from my grip and lands on the floor. His free hand comes up and bashes me across the face, first in one direction and then the next, managing to not only loosen a couple of my teeth, but also to fling blood into my eyes. I'm blinded, the terrible stinging making my lids slam shut automatically. The feeling of my life draining away combined with my sudden blindness causes a panic to rise up in me like I've never known before. It takes me to another level of crazy, almost as if I've already left this realm and on my way to the next. I don't even notice when my training takes over. The first thing I do is attempt to knock his choking hand away with a short but sharp punch to his brachial artery. His arm bends at the elbow as the shock and then numbness hits him, but his hand doesn't stop squeezing my neck. I have 2 seconds to wipe my forearm across my eyes and blink a couple times in an attempt to bring my opponent into focus before he's raising his hand to punch me again. His fist makes contact, and a ringing starts in my head. Even while stars are floating in the air in front of me and a grayness is closing in on me, I still manage to see my chance when it comes, though. The arm attached to the hand choking me is bent from my earlier strike, bringing my target in just close enough for me to reach it. My fist thrusts out to deliver a brutal, full-force punch to the midline of a sternum between the first and second ribs. I put everything I have into that hit, too, because I know my survival depends on it. Bones have cracked under the force of that maneuver in the past. I feel my own fracture at the middle finger, second joint. Having suffered the excruciating pain that comes from this kind of hit in my own training, I'm not surprised when my opponent looses his grip on my throat entirely and bends forward at the waist, holding his chest and grunting. Right now, he's not only suffering the effects of a cracked rib or two, but his heart is probably experiencing a pretty severe arrhythmia. Booyah, asshole! That'll teach you to crush my windpipe! When the oxygen comes rushing back into my lungs and brain, I want to fall to the floor weeping with happiness and relief, but I can't even take a moment to enjoy the feeling of my life force returning. This guy's playing for keeps, and he's not down for the count yet. Lucky for me, his temporary paralysis and bent-over posture put him in the perfect position for retribution. Time to end this game once and for all. I'm having flashbacks to the level challenges I faced and won. It's not pretty to be reliving my past like that, to be doing things here that I did there. But I'm not sorry, because I'm not just protecting myself right now. I'm protecting my crew. With that thought in mind, I bring my elbow down with all the force I have in me, delivering a crushing blow to his pulmonary plexus. With a wheezy grunt, he falls flat on his face at my feet, his neck exposed right next to my boot. How convenient. My nostrils flare as I draw my leg back and tense my core muscles to deliver the kick of the century. His carotid artery is my destination, and I'm pretty sure I hit it when his entire body freezes in an arch of pain after I make contact. My foot is throbbing from the abuse I've just delivered to both of us. I think I've broken at least one toe. Gurgling sounds start coming out of his throat, and his hands reach out, scratching at the floor as if to drag his body away. But their efforts are in vain. His body goes nowhere as his face turns almost blue. I limp 2 steps back to put some space between us, wiping blood, both his and mine, from my face and eyes with my one good hand. I can finally see clearly again, and what lies before me fills me with equal measures of relief and regret. He's not going to be getting up anytime soon to hurt me. In fact, I don't think he's going to be getting up ever again. Pink foam gathers at the corners of his mouth as his body stiffens for a few seconds, bucks a couple times, and then goes slack. Blood from his hand pools over the grate beneath him, the sounds of the drops hitting the empty storage space below overly loud. Wet-sounding gasps pass through his lips, and then nothing. I don't know how long it is before I hear boots nearby, but there are several, and they're coming fast. Tam is the first one to arrive, followed shortly by Gus and then Baybong.
"Holy shit! What the hell happened here?"
Tam asks. I look over to see him staring at me. There's fear in his eyes, but I don't know if it's fear for my safety or in response to me. Gus points at Captain Bob.
"He doesn't look good."
Baybong doesn't say anything. He just walks over and stands next to me, close enough that his arm is touching mine. I pull strength from his presence. It's then that the painful throbbing of my broken finger and toes makes it into my conscious brain. Definitely more than one toe is broken. Damn it.
"Did he attack you?"
Tam asks, moving to face me a little more. He's ignoring the body on the ground now. I open my mouth to speak, but can only croak unintelligible words at him. My throat is swelling badly.
"Of course he attacked her,"
Baybong says, sounding disgusted.
"Look at her neck! Look at her face!"
I reach up to touch my throat, but Baybong takes my hand and holds it tight.
"Don't. You need MI or you're going to be in trouble. Come on."
The others move out of the way quickly as he pulls me behind him. When I limp and then trip over one of Captain Bob's legs and almost go down, Baybong swings me up into his arms and holds me like a stupid baby. I struggle to get away and yell at him, but all I manage to do is sound and look like a dying goat.
"Just relax, would ya? Jesus, let a person help once in a while."
I give up on getting away from him as he strides down corridors and up and down stairs with me in his arms. We finally arrive at the infirmary, a place I had yet to visit. And now here I am as a patient. Jeffers looks up from what appears to be an inventory check.
"What happened?"
He moves over to join Baybong, the twins, and me at one of the two exam tables in the room.
"Captain Boob,"
Baybong says. I start to laugh, but it hurts too much to continue, making tears prick my eyes.
"Look at her neck,"
Gus says.
"Looks like he put her in a noose and swung her around with it or something."
He leans in so close I can feel his breath on my skin. He points as he stares and whistles.
"Look at that swelling there. Damn, she's lucky her neck wasn't broken."
Apparently my horrific injuries are fascinating.
"Lie back,"
Jeffers says, pushing on my shoulder. I try to listen, but as soon as I get past the vertical, I feel like I'm suffocating. I fight to right myself and hate the fact that tears break free and trail down my cheeks. He nods.
"Okay, okay, no lying back. I get it. Just wait here."
He turns his attention to Gus.
"Help me find the supplies I need."
Gus and Jeffers turn around, their backs to me, and Baybong moves to stand between my legs where they hang over the edge of the table.
"You're going to be fine."
He looks all over my body.
"Is any of this blood yours?"
I shrug. Tam points to my face.
"She's got that under her eye, and that next to her nose. That's her blood there."
Baybong squints.
"Yeah, not too bad, though. Maybe a couple stitches. I think most of this,"
he gestures at my flight suit,
"belongs to that fat ass."
"Good," Tam says. He looks at Baybong.
"You want me to be sure that guy's dead?" "You'd better. Be careful."
Tam nods and leaves the room at a jog. I reach out to him and try to grunt out a request, but it doesn't work. My throat is killing me.
"What? What do you need?"
I tap my empty sheath, trying to show Baybong with my eyes how desperate it makes me feel not to have it with me. Baybong nods.
"You left your knife there?"
I nod fast.
"And you want it back?"
I grab his hand and nod again.
"All right, I'll get it when we're done here."
I shake my head. "I want it now. Now." Baybong looks over at Jeffers and then at me.
"You guys okay with her? I need to go get something."
"Go. We're fine," Jeffers says, not looking back. Baybong nods at me.
"I'm going to get your knife, and then I'm coming right back. Don't die on me while I'm gone."
I try to smile, but my lips are trembling too much. More tears join the others. He pats me lightly on the cheek a few times before leaving.
I lift my forearm up to cover my face. I hate crying in front of people.
Chapter 22.
Beibong's been gone too long. He was running when he left, and he said he'd be right back. The panic is rising up inside me again. He's not dead. The pirate's not dead. I try to push Jeffrey's hand out of my face, but he's very persistent about cleaning my cuts. He says he has to use the cold laser if I'm going to be without scars. I yell. My throat is too sore to help me form actual words. He sighs in frustration. What? What are you trying to say? Gus leans in.
I think she said
Jeffers pauses and stares at him. Gus is too busy focusing on me to notice.
Did he knock your teeth out or something?
Jeffers pushes him gently off to the side.
He choked her. Her windpipe is swollen.
He touches my jaw with a single finger.
Did he knock any teeth out?
I lift my hand and wiggle it in the horizontal position. Gus points at it.
I think that means maybe.
Jeffers looks at him over the magnifying glasses he's wearing.
Don't you think she'd know for sure if she were missing teeth?
Gus frowns as he stares at me.
Yeah, probably. Are you worried some of your teeth might come out?
I nod, becoming exhausted just from trying to deal with Gus and his silliness. I point to the exit and slap my leg where my knife sheath is. It's still empty, and with every second that goes by, I worry more about that.
She wants to slap the shit out of someone, I think,
Gus says, standing up straight and taking a step back.
Hopefully it's not me.
He smiles but then looks worried, moving his gaze between Jeffers and me.
It's not you,
Jeffers says, lifting the cleaning pad and spray to my face again.
She wants her knife.
Gus looks out the door.
What's going on with them? What's taking them so long?
I wave at the door.
She's telling you to go see,
Jeffers says, putting his instruments on the tray at his left.
They're probably moving the body to the deep freeze for storage.
I nod, praying he's right. But Beibong said he'd be right back. Where is he? Where's Tam?
All right, if you're sure you don't want me here, to help or stand guard or whatever.
Gus's chest puffs up a little at the last part.
We'll manage,
Jeffers says, taking the cold laser tool out of its case and checking the energy levels. Gus disappears, and Jeffers levels the tool at my cheek. I stare straight ahead while the emotions generated by what happened start seeping in past the adrenaline that was keeping me level-headed until now. I start to tremble all over. Jeffers stops what he's doing to reach over and take something off his tray. Putting the cold laser down, he lifts my wrist, sticking something onto it. A strip of some sort.
What?
I ask, marveling at how warm it feels.
It will help with the chemical imbalance you have right now. You're coming down from your battle high, and this will make it easier to equilibrate.
I nod as he picks up his laser. The trembling has already lessened.
Do you want to tell me what happened?
I laugh bitterly. Just a snort, really. I'd love to tell him, but my throat has other ideas. When I point to it, he nods.
Did he attack you?
I nod. Jeffers puts his hand on my chin.
No more nodding. I need to keep this thing focused just on the injury and not the surrounding tissue.
I blink once.
Why don't we hold off on the question and answer session until your throat is feeling better?
He pauses to wait for my response. I blink twice. He smiles briefly before going back to the lasering. I sit as quietly as I can, focusing on my near future as a way of settling into the pain that comes from the sealing up of my skin. Jeffers didn't even ask me if I wanted anesthesia, and that makes me feel warm inside. He knows I'd say no, just like he would. We have a commonality that has created a bond, a tenuous one, but it does exist. It gives me hope.
So what's next for me?
I guess the Captain Bob problem has somewhat been resolved. I assume if there were anyone else on that ship of his, I would have heard about it by now. He attempted to take my life and failed, so I get to claim his ship. That gives us a PC to use, assuming the engineers can figure out a way to dock it on a more permanent basis. No way do I want to be night-crawling with a piece of equipment that can fly off and demolish us with one hit.
Many have speculated about what happens to a soul lost in a wormhole, but not me. I won't even let my brain go there. Some idiots say you get transported back to Earth before the end. I hate all those brainless troids who always talk about the place like it was some kind of Eden. None of them have ever seen it firsthand. And if it was so great, why are we all here? Before I can go any further down that philosophical path, there's a disruption at the door that makes Jeffers pull away and hold the laser down near his waist. It's Gus, and he's in a panic.
You have to come! Come quick!
I leap off the table, dancing around, when I accidentally put too much weight on my broken toes.
Motherfur!
Gus's eyes are shining with what looks like tears. I take a big step over toward him and grab his arm, shaking it, frowning at him. I need an explanation.
That guy wasn't dead!
Gus's pitch is so high, he sounds like a girl.
He's not there, and neither is Tam or Baybong. There's blood, too much blood.
I feel the warmth drain from my face, my entire body going cold with dread. Jeffers moves me to the side, grabs Gus by the arm, and speaks in a very calm voice.
Let's go.
They run down the hall together, and I hop and limp after them as best I can. They disappear from view in seconds. Chapter 23. When I get to the spot near the brig where I thought I'd left Captain Bob for dead, I see why Gus was so panicked. There is a lot of blood here, and it's not mine or the pirates. At least it's not the blood we spilled together. There's too much of it.
Fuck.
I fling myself up the stairs, ignoring the sharp pain coming from my broken finger. It's not as bad off as my foot is, so I make the sacrifice, my hands acting as supports for the rest of my body as I hobble down the hallway. Like Gus and Jeffers, I'm following the trail of blood that seems to be retracing my steps back to the cold storage area. Of course it is. If the pirate survived, he'd want that damn disc before he got back on his ship. I stop right where I am, at a crossroads of corridors. One way will bring me to the frozen things, the other to the airlock where his ship is tethered. Assuming the others followed the blood trail and are with the pirate and the chicken, I choose the other direction. Jeffers can handle whatever comes up there, and I'll be waiting for Captain Bob's fat ass at the door to his ship just in case he's already headed in this direction. He's going to have to go through me to get on board.
A girl!
I wheeze as I limp and stumble along the pathway to the PC. The commubot doesn't answer. Of course she doesn't. I'm not saying her name properly now, am I? I try again.
Adele!
The word won't come out. My throat is totally messed up. Every breath used to speak is better suited to a gasp for air. I keep going down the hallway, hoping to come upon a keypad soon. 10 meters farther, and I'm rewarded. I nearly fall against it as my hand comes up to make contact.
Adele!
I moan as my hand presses a button sequence designed to bring the commubot up manually. Hello, Captain. What may I do for you today?
Why, God?
I quit trying to express myself and just lean on the wall, my face next to the keypad. I'm sorry, Captain, but I do not understand. My toes are throbbing even more than before. Now that I've stood still for longer than 3 seconds, my aches and pains come out front and center, no longer ignorable. Hello, Captain. How may I help you? Never mind, stupid bot. I'm not that far from the PC. I just need to get there. And if he comes at me with my own knife,